Abraham's servant arrives at the well, praying that God will send the woman who was meant to be Isaac's wife. And onto the scene steps Rebecca. The author of Genesis describes Rebecca as very fair to look upon, but she also proves herself to be compassionate, generous, and hospitable, offering water for the servant and his camels, and even inviting this weary traveler to spend the night with her family to rest. In other words, Rebecca fits the bill perfectly. It is Rebecca who decides that she will leave her family behind and embark on this new life with Isaac. When asked if she will go with the servant to Canaan, she answers with eloquent simplicity, "I will." And with that simple sentence, Rebecca seals her fate as matriarch of the chosen people and lifelong companion to Isaac. This brave and faithful woman sets out for a new land and a new vocation, following the footsteps of Abraham himself from Haran to Canaan. The climax of the story comes in the final scene when Isaac and Rebecca lay eyes on each other for the first time. It is a scene suited for Hollywood. Isaac, settled in the valley, has gone out for an evening stroll. He hears something and looks up. He sees a herd of camels coming toward him. Rebecca sees the profile of a man from some distance away and quickly slips off the camel to prepare herself for the meeting. They get closer and closer until finally they are looking into each other's eyes. You can hear the servant in the background chattering away about how God had answered his prayer, and this woman had appeared in front of the well at exactly the same time that he did. Their eyes still locked, they walk away toward the encampment below. Now, at this point, the details get a little murky, but the text is clear on two points. Rebecca becomes Isaac's wife, and he loved her. He loved her. From start to finish, this is a story of God's providential care. This is a story of a God whose promises can be trusted and who will make a way out of no way. This is the God who provides the people of Israel water in the middle of the desert and parts the Red Sea so that they can walk safely on dry land. And yet there is nothing fatalistic about this story, as if God had it all planned out and the characters of the story are simply going through motions. What is so great about this story is that the characters seem real to us, true to life, not characters at all, but like real people who must make decisions and worry about the outcome. People who must act and take risks and even pray for wisdom to do the right thing. This is a story not only about God coming through on his promises, it's also a story about people and the ways in which they sometimes unwittingly participate in fulfilling the promises of God. And in the end, it is a love story. Not only of God's love for us, but just a plain old human love story. The writer of Genesis captures that in one understated sentence. He loved her. And in that moment, Rebecca and Isaac commit their lives to each other, and a new journey begins for them both. Many commentators have noted that this is the first time in the Bible that love between humans is named. But that's not quite true. This actually marks the second time that the word love is used in reference to human relationships. And you may be interested to know where it appears for the first time. It's when God tests Abraham by commanding him to sacrifice Isaac. When God says, "Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and offer him as a burnt offering." The Bible is not overly sentimental about human love. But these stories are true to life, often heartbreakingly so. Even this beautiful story of love at first sight does not allow us to linger for long over the faces of these two original star-crossed lovers. The place to look is not their faces, but on the road that lies ahead of them. It will take much more than that wonderful feeling of love to carry them through the challenges of life that lay ahead of them. It will take the constant and unceasing presence of a God who is willing to dwell in the details of human life. Even though their love and their relationship is richly blessed by God, it is not endless bliss and romance for Isaac and Rebecca. Think of their twin boys, Jacob and Esau, already wrestling in the womb. Think of Jacob's endless trickery and deception, which Rebecca not only supports, but even enables because Jacob is her favorite. Think of the way the saga ends with Esau's quest to kill his younger brother and Jacob escaping with his mother's help. And when Esau marries, the author of Genesis records this not so subtle phrase: they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. So there's nothing idealistic about the life that Isaac and Rebekah will lead beyond that first declaration of love. And yet, their love somehow survives, and their family somehow finds its way back to wholeness before all is said and done. In what is one of the most moving moments in the book of Genesis, the author describes the death of Isaac this way. And Isaac breathed his last. He died and was gathered to his people, old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. The old rivals, the brothers, return home, driven by a love that is so much stronger even than love at first sight. Just 9 miles or so from Jerusalem is the ancient city of Bethlehem. It is a Palestinian city surrounded by a security wall. Many Christians in Bethlehem have never been to Jerusalem. They are simply not allowed beyond the wall. It is sad and seemingly hopeless inside that walled off city, but there is also some glimpses of hope, of Christians and Muslims working together, of hope for a different kind of future. That hope was captured for me in the graffiti on the Palestinian side of the wall. It's in English, because the people there want people like me and you to know and understand what their hope is all about. And there on that wall that divides people, was the simple phrase, "Love wins." Despite all the evidence to the contrary, it was a profound expression of hope. A message to American pilgrims who had come to see the place where Jesus was born, to remind us that if we really believed the gospel we preach, we would know that love wins. If there ever was a story in which, despite the obstacles, love wins, it is the story of Isaac and Rebecca. Love wins not because of that moment when their eyes met. Love wins because love is stronger than death, because it is fiercer than the grave. Love wins because it endures, outlasts, despite the odds. Love wins because God's love for us could not be contained even in a tomb. Love wins because God is love. Stanley Hauerwas, a cantankerous theologian who recently retired from Duke Divinity School, argues that in his opinion, the worst question that we can possibly ask a newly married couple is, "Do you love each other?" He explains that people at that stage in a relationship have absolutely no idea what love is. They don't know what love will mean when your partner is lying in the hospital. They don't know what love will entail in moments of anger and distrust when the relationship is stretched to its breaking point. No, he explains, the question is not, "Do you love this person?" The question to ask is, "Will you learn to love this person?" The purpose of a committed relationship, he says, is to establish the bounds of fidelity within which love can be cultivated. Then, after many years, we can look back and say, "Yes, I really did love you." The joy of human love, in its many forms, is that it was not a human creation or idea. Our ability to love is rooted and grounded in the unending love of God. Because of this, and for no other reason, love wins. Thanks be to God. Love wins.